Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm Brett Twitty, Director of Admissions for the Executive Formats of the Darden MBA, and you are listening to a new episode. So on this episode of the podcast, I'd like to feature a conversation I recently recorded with a member of our class of 2019, Melinda Woods. Melinda and I sat down to talk a little bit more about her journey, what led her to pursue an MBA, what brought her specifically to Darden, what she's enjoyed about the program so far, and also how she juggles work and school and being a mom. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my interview with Melinda Woods. Melinda, welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So for our listeners at home, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
Sure. I am a, I would call myself almost crazy now, participant in the Executive MBA program at Darden, coming from the Pentagon on a regular basis. I work for the Secretary of Defense in a program that gives hundreds of millions of dollars to defense industry, really to industry. I have a seven-year-old son. I'm a single parent. My son has an autism diagnosis, so I spend a lot of my time fighting with the public school system in D.C. I do live in D.C. And I came into the government from high-tech industry. So I have that kind of microelectronics, Microsoft, Intel Corporation in my blood as well. Mm-hmm. So a lot having gone on before I got here.
And you had done additional education before coming to Darden.
That's right. So I am an electrical engineer at University of Michigan, Wolverine first. That's where my undergrad is from. And then Georgia Tech, also electrical engineering.
So how did you think about getting an MBA? Walk us through sort of the analysis that you did.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I actually had always said that I would not do an MBA. So there's like two tracks for engineers coming out of school. So engineering is one of the highest paid undergraduate degrees you can get. And so people will either kind of do that and take the technical track, but a lot of folks, and it's particularly when I came out in the late 90s, so kind of 99 timeframe, also had seen the sticker tag for if you have an engineering degree and an MBA. And so that was a very popular track as well. So people would work a couple of years and then go get an MBA in kind of a residential program. And I was just like, oh no, I am the tech guy. I'm not doing that. Like, I'm going to be on the technical track. And then I went into school and ended up directly into my first real job, like full-time job, was business development, technical marketing. So I actually had to make a choice and kind of go the more business route anyway. So I'd been around that business. And I did great and I loved it. It was actually still to this day, one of the most rewarding jobs I had in technical marketing, as an engineer. Most people went and got MBAs in that job, but I was still like, well, I'm kind of doing it now. I didn't manage profit and loss, but I had kind of the brand piece. And then we were actually Motorola semiconductor product sector, like other companies, semiconductor sectors, was spun off as a wholly owned subsidiary. And then was going to go public as an independent company. And all the focus was on, and ironically we talked about this today in class, was on gross margin, which came down to the salespeople and the marketing people. And it just was rough. And I was like, I'm getting out. I'm going to something more interesting like the public sector, because that's really philanthropic and it's not about all this kind of profit and gross margin thing. And I had been recruited by CIA. In my master's program. And so I said, I'm just going to go only talk to government agencies. And I did that. And that was fun. But I ended up working. So I started out in the technical sector, telecommunications related intelligence stuff. But I ended up getting more into business related things. So I looked at foreign investment in the United States. And also export controls, things of that nature for the government. And so eventually I got to the point I was telling one of my managers, look, I've done all this work, but I haven't gotten any certifications. The government is supposed to be like giving me something back. And so I was talking about all the traditional things I knew about, which is like the PMP and the CISSP, all the letters that people have around the beltway. And he said to me, don't do any of those things. Go get a MBA. And he said, you know, that's going to be one of the most valuable degrees that you can have. It's a terminal type degree. I guess you can get a PhD in business, but the MBA is a terminal type degree. Very interdisciplinary, multifaceted. Go do that. And I said, okay.
So you're here now. What have been some of the key takeaways from your first year plus in the program? I mean, obviously you've taken a lot of class. You've been on a global residency at this point?
I have. I went to Europe this summer, and I'm actually going to, I added India.
Oh, that's great. So you're getting ready to take a trip.
Yes. Which actually is one of the takeaways. Like, I really should have been a Gemba. And I think we talk about that. It's just a very rich experience. And for some reason, the battle rhythm really works nicely. I don't know if it's just packing all those classes in a week, and with that kind of international thing going on, it makes it, I don't know, feel more palatable. But honestly, it's multifaceted. I never actually expected the experience that I'm having. The number of, like, the main takeaway that I tell people about all the time, is you come to On Grounds, and it's really kind of like a surreal experience. Like, there is no place where you go and you have like 60 to 120, if we're all together with the other, section. People, like, literally on the same page around, like, this next phase. Like, what are you doing next? And everything about what you're doing and what you're talking about is encouraging yourself, figuring out ways to do that next thing. It's like you kind of release all the other stuff that's going on at home. It's like a microcosm, and you don't, it's almost a sanctuary in that way. Mm-hmm. A leadership and development sanctuary is how mm-hmm. I view it. That doesn't really exist anywhere. In undergrad, we probably had and didn't understand it.
Right.
But now you value it after you've been working and you go back to real life of got to go get groceries, dinner, schools, whatever. It really is that. And so for me, that's the biggest takeaway. And of course, leadership, I thought I knew a lot. I do have a lot to contribute, but certainly there's always more. Mm-hmm. And that finance and accounting really have, you know, been exactly things that I needed to know. Valuations and discounted cash flow and all that stuff is pretty important. But it's really that the environment is just, it's really kind of utopian as it relates to being in a positive place and being encouraged for moving on to the next phase of your career. You just don't have that in other places.
Yeah. And it's, you're right. When you come back as an adult, you have a slightly different perspective on school, right? The luxury of being able to sit in a class and be around people who are committed to learning, right?
Absolutely.
And actively interested in that. One of the things that's been nice talking with your classmates about sort of how they manage the program is, to a person, they've all noted that the culture is supportive, mm-hmm. right? You have any experiences or that you would want to highlight, sort of thinking about, you know, how maybe your classmates have helped you manage this experience?
Yeah, I would say, I'm shocked at the number of people who have. So I am probably going to, ironically and never expected, make a career change during the program. Mm-hmm. Never would have thought that, or not maybe career change, but a job change. And folks who I just never would have expected have said, hey, let me connect you with this person who could definitely help you figure out if this is the next thing or be helpful in that process. I have also been able to really kind of connect with some of the women, quite frankly. And so there's one person that I still remember our first conversation in the bathroom at LR1, who was telling me about her experiences in India. And we always go back to that. That was our bonding moment. And she was telling me about her challenges as it relates to speaking up for herself, even, and her family background, all in the bathroom on a break. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that has been our bonding moment. And so we always kind of go back to that. And quite frankly, she's come back to me at times earlier on in the program and said, you know, I really just don't feel like I fit in. And, you know, I don't understand if people, you know, get to know me. And so I think over time I've watched her and I've talked to her kind of through that, from a internal to kind of the U.S. culture and environment, like how to just be okay and continue to kind of approach people. And I feel like it's been great, but she also has helped me through. She's invited us over for dinner. The kids gotten together, like really creating that family, environment. So definitely supportive.
So, you started out by noting all the things that you have on your plate. So how are you managing all this? What's your strategy?
I was thinking, I think about that often. Like, I was talking to actually one of the class of 2020 folks. So we have some kind of informal mentor relationships with some of the folks. And I was encouraging this person because they were talking about decision analysis and whatever else they're doing. They're a month in, right?
Yeah, decision analysis and global economics.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They're two tough classes right out the
exactly.
gate.
Exactly. And I said, well, feel at home that you're not the only person that doesn't have enough time. So I have really gotten to a rhythm of, first of all, I used to be a workaholic, but I just really have like not been able to continue to work in the 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 o'clock at night days. And so everything has its kind of time. And quite frankly, I must in my life, I must use some of the time, and everyone in the class kind of knows this about me, use some of the time when other people are sleeping to read and get things done. But I must say, I've done it and it's not been overly taxing, right? I mean, it's just a part of what I have to do. And I also make sure that I do the networking kind of social piece too. So I will sometimes opt to go have the conversation in what we call the bar. The lobby is our bar around here. I don't know if you guys know that. That's our hangout spot. Like, I'll meet you in the lobby. I'll do that instead of reading last night. So we realized last night is our last on grounds.
That's right.
Friday night as a cohort. Other people will be here. And I said, you know, if you have to stay, I stayed. It's just to have those, to make mm-hmm. those connections. And then I just knew that I had to go back and read. But it, to me, is important because you'll have some people who actually have foregone all of those interactions because they're like, I have to go back and read. And it's like that, you have to do it all. Mm-hmm. So I have just figured out that I have to do everything, and I don't have to max out everything, but I do have to do enough of it. So I have to have these kind of slices of time that I stay very, very kind of religious about going through them. And I have to use the night a lot of times. Other people don't. I do. I just have to. It's just not enough time.
So you mentioned, you know, sort of you work late at night, you mm-hmm. know, and you sort of find a schedule that works for you. How long did it take you to settle in?
I would say, and it's funny because I do remember the point we talked about it. I'm like, okay, kind of feel like I hit the stride. I feel like that was Q5, mm-hmm. Q4, Q5. So it may have been even Q4. So like three quarters. Mm-hmm. And, I like the front loading kind of aspect of people will call the quant or kind of the more labor intensive, like you got to go read a book, study, do some problems. It'll take you hours. I like front loading that. That's stylistic though. Some people are like, I don't just spread it out or do it at the end. That's just my style. Get the hardest stuff up front. So for me, I preferred it that way, but it was a lot. And that's why when I was talking to this 2020, I'm like, oh yeah. You'll get through it. And I actually remember the 18 saying the same thing to us. Mm-hmm. Like, it actually, you'll still have hard classes. Like, don't think marketing's easy, right? Mm-hmm. But this kind of DA intensive finance and those things, it'll get more manageable. And I must say, for me, it was good doing Europe, doing the Europe global during the summer, because it felt like that felt like the switch. Like when mm-hmm. I came back from Europe, it's like, okay, so now we're on Q7, actually.
Yeah.
Q7. So yeah, it's like a whole different ball game at that point. Elective start, mm-hmm. right? And electives you just kind of have to be excited about because you get to pick them. So you don't get to complain that, oh my God, you don't like this class, which I'm not that type of person mm-hmm. anyway. But yeah, it took about three solid, maybe four quarters before it was like, okay, I got the rhythm. Like, you know when the classes are coming, you know, you just got it, right? I can use my phone if I need to in the car for a couple minutes. When I get home, I'll switch it on. You know, it just, the anxiety lowers. Like, you've seen that you can do it. You've gotten through DA. You can do it. It's okay, right? It takes like probably two, three quarters to see that you can do it, the whole span of it, because by then you would have had, you know, LOs, you've had everything. You've had the writing and you've had the quant, and different people kind of struggle on different things, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, that's absolutely true. It's interesting to hear you say sort of Q4, Q5, because, you know, I think about the 2020s a lot being around your class here for this weekend residency, because the hardest thing about the start of school is that it's the start of school and you're taking tough classes. So we try to remind people, if you just hang in there,
it will get
better, but you're learning how to manage your time in this new program with all the stuff that you have going on. And you have hard classes.
Yeah. And I think the on-grounds piece with work, it just takes a while. So in 3 quarters, you've had, 6 on-grounds, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, and then you're like getting grades and when they come and how that lands on you. So it's not, if you were in school as in a full-time program, you would be having these experiences every day, but you kind of have to get through that on-grounds, go back into it, start over again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, okay, so now this is what it is. Like, this is how it works. And and so it takes a bit, but you will get through. And Q3 is, you're still not halfway through. So you got to kind of get there. All right. So I feel like we're on the downhill stretch now at the end of Q7.
Yeah. But. So for those of you wondering about all this quarter talk,
yes.
Q1, Q2, Q3. So our program is divided into 10 two-month mm-hmm. quarters. You, of course, begin and end the program with a week-long leadership residency. Mm-hmm. Those are both in Charlottesville on the grounds of the Darden School, and in between you have 10 two-month quarters. The first 8 quarters or 16 months of the program are core curriculum, although you do get to take an elective in quarter 7, mm-hmm. which is the one that Melinda is in right now. Mm-hmm. But by and large, those are our core curriculum set classes. First 16 months, you're in the core, and it's worth noting that's the same core that our full-time mm-hmm. residential students mm-hmm. Take. And then the last 4 months, or 2 quarters of the program, are electives. So Q9, Q10, those are electives, mm-hmm. and you choose your classes. So mm-hmm. Q5 would be about the one-year mm-hmm. part mm-hmm. mark in our program. So quarter 5 typically hits, if I'm doing this math right, around the summer, mm-hmm. close to the summer, mm-hmm. early summer. And I do think you're right that's when students really feel like, okay, I'm figuring this out. But yeah, it takes a little while.
It does. And you go through the cold winter months, the darker days. Yeah. And so spring, you've done it. Longer days, warmer weather, going into the summer, you kind of, okay, I can relax. Yeah.
So, and we have a lot of prospective students that listen to the podcast. Great. And what would be your advice for them as they think through? I mean, I think the biggest challenge for most people is sort of like being, you know, sort of confident that they can do it, right? What would you say to somebody thinking about coming back to school?
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I really didn't, I deliberately didn't think about coming back to school because mm-hmm. that's like, a frightening,
it's intimidating, right?
Concept, right? And I'm a person who's always done well at school. What I think is, it's a great journey at this stage. So after having worked a little bit and seen some of those kind of challenges in life, and a lot of people who may have, you know, have marriages, children, or what have you, when you've seen those different perspectives and had a different vantage point in life than you had when you came out of undergrad, and it was just, everything was, like I always say, the world was your oyster. Everything was potential. Now you've realized some of that potential, and it may not be as much potential as it would have been based on choices that you've made, to come back into this environment and know that you've lived, like you've survived life, right? So mm-hmm. school is not going to kill you at this point. Like, know that. Like, you have done it. And in most cases, people have gone through kind of really challenging things by the time you come into a program like this. And that can have to do with relationship things, death, children. I mean, they've gone through things. You've changed careers maybe once or twice, and you survive that stuff. So is school really that bad? Like, that's what I would mm-hmm. say to people, really. Like, you got it. Like, you made it here, right?
Yeah.
So you have what it takes to do it, and remind yourself of that. And then think about what it means to do it. Because you will, I feel like there are a lot of kind of type A, hard charger, high achieving people mm-hmm. who get humbled when you get around others who are like you. It's literally a microcosm of people who were handpicked, right? So you get humbled. You're not necessarily the best at everything. And that's actually a good lesson. Mm-hmm. But what's also encouraging, and what also I think keeps you going, is you are amazing because you were handpicked and you are among those people. And so just know, like, for me, I'd say you've made it this far. So continue to remember that you can do it.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to think that you can't. Also, if you're having trouble, and this has come up right in our cohort, reach out. Talk to your cohort, talk to whomever you need to. which is again challenging, I think, because of the type A hard charging, high achieving. I'm not used to needing to need help, and how is everyone else here seems like they're getting it, but then it's not even the case, right? So I've heard that, like, oh, but half the class kind of didn't get that, right? And so reach out, but you got here, so you can do it. That's really what I'd say. You will hit a stride. And I literally remember the 18 saying that, like, you will hit a stride. You will figure out, if you're a person who's a perfectionist, you will figure out the diminishing returns. Like, you'll figure it out. Like, you will decide, like, this is really what I want to spend my time on, and the rest is not, it's okay. Because there may really not be time to do every single thing perfectly, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Cannot let perfect be the enemy of good.
That's right.
In a program like this. You make such a great point about your sort of high-achieving individuals. It is daunting to be in a room full of other high-achieving individuals, and I think it can be hard for people who've been extremely successful to encounter things that make them feel kind of vulnerable, mm-hmm. and they're just not naturally good at. Mm-hmm. You know, you're used to at your job being, like, really good at your mm-hmm. job, and then you come to an accounting class or mm-hmm. a marketing class or a leading organizations class, mm-hmm. and you realize, oh, man, this is not naturally coming mm-hmm. to me. I'm going to have to spend some time on this. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, you're not used to being forced to do things that you're not naturally good at. At this age and stage mm-hmm. as an adult, you've been able to self-select what you participate in, and you select the things that make you feel good about yourself in general. So that's a part of the learning process, right, is doing things that you don't necessarily love or are not perfect at, and exposing and becoming, continually becoming who you're going to be. So to me, again, that's why it's good, because you've come through some things. It reminds you, like, you have to remind yourself. It's another young woman that I have a really good relationship as it relates to kind of us supporting each other. And you realize, wait, but I've come through a lot. So you remind yourself of that. So you can do it. You got it. But you might not be the top at it, but that's okay. To me, that's the lesson. Like, there is all these kind of regular checks in life that happen, and it's kind of a cyclic thing where you know nothing, right? And you climb up the curve and you're at the top of the curve, and then you go up to the next stair and you're at the bottom, right? Like, you know nothing again. So this is the stage where you've been at the top, you've been able to self-select, well, it's time to start learning again. So I think it's good. It's great. It's humbling. But that's where the growth is.
Yeah. So I always find it helpful. You see folks at LR1 or in the first quarter who you can tell, like, class has been kind of hard, or, you know, getting a little bit outside their comfort zone. And it's always helpful to remind people why they came here in the first place, because they didn't know how to do all this stuff, right? It was all, you know, some of this was completely unfamiliar. You realized right. You had a gap. This is what addressing that gap looks like. It's what it feels like. But that's why you're here.
Yeah. LR1 was tough, by the way.
Yeah.
LR1 was tough. I wasn't ready for it. I was like in revolt mode, that people wanted me to do anything before the first day that classes started. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm not reading anything. That was a mistake. So tough in the sense of it required some time. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I kind of set the stage, but LRs or leadership residencies are particular, and they're amazing in a different way, right? Because you do have this concentrated time with this group of amazing folks who are just encouraging and wonderful and intricate and just multifaceted in so many different ways. But yeah, like, that's it. That is the boot camp, right? If you will.
Yeah, it's your orientation to Dart, right?
Yeah.
You have orientation, and then you have a leadership residency one, which
yes.
is really like, and we're going to give you a taste of what this
yes,
is going to be.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it is good, though.
So how do you balance being a mom and being in the program?
That's I think, been difficult. I'm lucky in that my son is 7 and a half. Well, almost 8. And we've had these conversations, some of us with children, period. I knew I went into the program saying, my son is going to be spend a lot of time on his iPad for the next 21 months. I knew that. Like, I had to be okay with that. And I am a no screen kind of mother. So we don't really watch TV at all. Very, very active. Rock climbing, biking, taekwondo, rollerblading, roller skating, swimming. Like, that's the type of mother that I am. But I had to kind of settle in myself that he won't break. He's going to be okay. He won't even remember this. Like, he might know that I was in school, but it's okay. So I have allowed myself, given myself space to not be again that, like, you won't be able to be. I literally haven't been, well, I've been able to make a few PTA type things, but not to the extent that I would normally be. And it's okay, because you know what? You can't do everything all the time perfectly. So that's the first key for me in balance, is giving myself the space, giving myself the license to take time to do something for myself that's also going to benefit him. And it's okay. Like, he doesn't have to, I don't have to be at everything, but I do still try to go to things. I have put him in events, like more events than I typically would, to kind of make up for the time I don't have time to spend with him directly. But, and he knows when I'm in the asynchronous classes, like a lot of the kids comes in, he sticks his head in. I mean, it's just like a common thing over time. Like, that's when you hit the stride at fourth quarter. They got it too. The kids are also there. They're like, oh, you're in this class thing. Oh, somebody on that screen. Who's that? So, you know, he's old enough to kind of go off and be alone, but he takes advantage because then he goes and gets an iPad, even when I tell him he can't. It's okay though. I feel like the license, giving yourself the license, it's okay. Not pass, but just really the permission to do it for yourself. It's 21 months, so it's not that long, like we talked about already. And kids are very resilient. So for me, it's just been really reminding myself of that. And even sometimes reminding him, like, I'm in school. He's like, oh, are you in school? You're in school too? Like, yeah, you're in first grade. And he's like, well, what grade are you in? I'm in, like, I don't know, 27th grade or something like that, right? And then, you know, so it's fun in that way because he's in school as well. He kind of gets, you know, oh, okay, I have to do this work and I'm doing my work. And in fact, my son was here with me last night. Just had to end up just spending the night with me. And he was talking to me about, oh, school. So I've really made it a part of the relationship, you know, the mother-son relationship. And giving myself space. So it's challenging in the sense that you can't do everything that you may want to do or that you were doing before. I was going into the house and I said, we did not bike ride one time this summer. And I was sad about that because that was a thing that I used to want to do. But I said, but next May and June, I will be there. We will be doing all the bike riding we didn't do. So, it's okay. Yeah. It's fine.
He makes such a good, I mean, so much of this, you talk about prioritization, sort of relentless prioritization you have to do in a program like this, or anytime you have a lot on your plate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be perfect right all the time in any facet of your life. Mm-hmm. Right? You make such a good point about giving yourself space. So I want to ask one more question.
Sure.
Sort of about the mentoring. Mm-hmm. You're a second year student. Mm-hmm. You're obviously talking with first year student. Mm-hmm. Is that through the Network of Executive Women?
It is not. It's actually through the Black MBA.
Okay. That's great.
Association.
So I'm glad to hear that we have multiple student organizations actively engaged in mentoring. So mm-hmm. What attracted you to that? Because, I mean, you're busy, right? So you're a mom.
It is actually crazy. So I was just telling another faculty member, Barbara, that I actually came to you originally. I don't know if you remember this, Brett, and said, how come I'm not hosting the students when they come through the class? And so as crazy as I am, I really don't have time for things. I also feel like, but I want to be doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, right? So I was really not all that excited when the BIMBA group, the Black MBA group, came up with this concept. I'm like, I don't know how good I'll be at this. And ironically, the first year students, so the first meeting happened and the first year students are like, I can't do this. I'm studying my whatever model for econ. And I kind of laughed and I said, you know what? It's okay if I can't make every meeting. And I texted the young lady and I said, hey, I'm really better at text. I'm really, really crazy busy. I do better late. As long as we can fit it in, I might not be again, like at every event and what have you. But I think I can be helpful. Again, I had to settle on that. And I knew that it would be valuable because I've gone through the first year already. So I know that you end up not having that much time anyway. So it's a great concept, right? Like, oh, we're going to mentor these first years. Well, we're busy. They're very busy getting acclimated. So it's, I'm glad that I did it. And it really is not as, time consuming as you might think, because people are just busy. They don't have time to be kind of sitting there talking to you all day either. They're trying to figure it out, right? So yeah, it was good.
Well, good. Well, Melinda, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brett.
And that was my conversation with Melinda Woods, a student in our class of 2019. Of course, as always, if you have comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the Exec MBA podcast, we are all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's E-X-E-C, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, thanks for listening.